One. Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Good evening, David.
So you were at Rogers Place tonight for Carolina's 6-2 win. That's what the final...
6-2 convincing win.
Stomped them.
Yeah, it was ass-kicking 101, I tweeted out in the third period. Carolina just dominated that game from the drop of the puck. They won so many puck battles, and the puck was in Edmonton's territory for the first 10 minutes of the game. I mean, the shots were 10-1. Score was 1-0 on a perfect shot on like a five-way passing play, and then Talbot had made two or three good saves even at that point just to keep it 1-0. And Oilers got the one goal and thought, oh, maybe they're going to get away with it, but they couldn't even make it out of the first period, and then wham wham in the second, and that was that. It was but I got to give the opposing team a lot of credit tonight. Carolina really impressed me. They played hard, and they had good skill on the puck. I mean, they made their shots, obviously. And they were picking top corners and stuff, but they were setting them up, and they were deserved goals for the most part.
The Oilers seemed a step behind the whole game, Bruce.
Yes.
The Carolina defense really moves the puck fast and well.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I think the Oilers are going to possibly, you don't want to read too much into this kind of game, but I think we've seen this game before a little bit, where they might have a little bit of trouble with these really fast teams, with really mobile, fast defensemen. Mm-hmm. I think we saw that a little bit last year, mm-hmm. and we certainly saw it in this game. The Oilers just could not get the forecheck going against defensemen who can really wheel move the puck.
That Carolina top four is very impressive. And they had the puck on a wheel a lot of the night. You know, it seemed like they were... I mean, when the puck did get out into the neutral zone, it would be coming back in a hurry. And the Canes are just real strong on the forecheck, especially in the early part of the game. Once, of course, they established the lead, a little bit score effects, but they were the better team just for about, I'd say, 50 of the 60 minutes. The Oilers had two little bursts. They had a nice burst at the end of the second when they got the 4-2 goal. And then they gave one in the first minute of the third and say goodnight.
Yeah, bit of bad luck. I mean, that Russell penalty was a terrible call. Where he went for the puck and wiped out the forward. You're allowed to do that if you get the puck first.
Yeah. I thought they changed that so that you can no longer, like they used to say, you can get, if you got the puck, anything goes after, you can wipe the guy right out. But now they call sometimes clipping, or I think they call tripping that time. He dove at the guy's legs and took him out. I mean, I think they did actually change that rule. So I didn't, a couple of the other penalties I thought a little bit phantom, but it wasn't the difference in this game.
So we're going to talk about three things tonight, Bruce. We're going to talk about the new penalty calling regimen in regards to Adam Larson and maybe a few other players. But we'll talk about Simpson and Fane, the third defense. And then the main topic, at the end of the podcast, we'll dig into the right-wing situation on the Oilers and how discombobulated it is right now in terms of who's going to play where and who's going to make the team.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the first topic. The NHL continues to crack down on slashing. There was some indication from John Shannon who reported that they were going to move away from that a little bit after the first games, but they've been pretty tough on stick fouls. I think it's great when they do this, when guys are getting hit in the hands by the stick, when the guy with the puck carrier's got the puck and someone slams his hands with their stick. That is not a hockey play. That shouldn't be legal, and I'm glad the NHL is cracking down on it. At the same time, Bruce, I'm worried, said this before, about Adam Larson a little bit, because in New Jersey, he learned to play a very vicious, tough brand of hockey from Scott Stevens.
Scott Stevens.
Involving a ton of stick work, and he did that all last year, and tonight he got the first of what I think are going to be a number of calls against him, because it's just going to be so hard to break that habit where a guy got an angle on him, was going to beat him into the slot. Larson kind of laid a semi-cross check on the guy. It was close, but if they're going to call that, Adam Larson's going to have to, as McClellan said in his post-game interview, move his feet to block the man and not get lazy and use his stick. It's going to be a challenge for him, I fear.
Yeah, well, tonight was a challenge for Adam Larson, period. I have to say I was not impressed with his game. And, you know, I'm a fan of the player. I'm a fan of the player type. I think that it's an essential kind of guy the team needs. But tonight, he just got beat two or three times, and he took a penalty, you know. And the penalty, as the time I said to my kid, 2 minutes for slashing, allegedly. And it was kind of weak sauce. But you know what? There was 10 penalties called in the game, and 6 of them were slashing. And there was 2 hooking, 1 tripping, and 1 holding. It wasn't exactly a Pier 6 slugfest. But there was every foul that was called was either slashing or obstruction of some sort. And the slashing, like I say, Larson does like to lay on the lumber a little bit, but I think he's smart enough that he's going to learn what's acceptable and what isn't. He didn't take a million penalties last year, and I'm sure he can modify his game.
Well, if he plays like he did last year, Bruce, he will take a million penalties this year. So there's going to be some adjustment, because so much of this is habit for the players now, the stick work. It's been a legal tactic.
Right.
And it's ingrained just to hack at the guy. If you weren't hacking at the guy before, you weren't doing your job.
Right. Well,
so that when it gets to that level of ingrained habit, it's not going to be easy for players to change, but they're going to have to suffer a bit.
If they do change, you know, a less greasy Adam Larson is a less effective Adam Larson. Mm-hmm. But you look around at all the other teams, and you'll find 1 or 2 or 10 guys you could say that about on those teams. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of adjusting that has to be done by 30 other teams in addition to the Oilers. And you just got to hope and expect that they're smart young players, which they have a lot on this team, and Adam Larson is one of them, are going to figure out. And that's what we saw last year in the Anaheim series, right? The veterans on the Anaheim team knew exactly what they could get away with, which seemingly was everything. But
yeah,
that's another sidebar. Let's go away from that.
Alrighty. Topic number 2. Most of the players who played in the game, I think, will be on the Oilers. They went with pretty much their pro roster. But there was a couple players out there fighting for jobs, and the last 2 segments are going to be on that. The first is Dylan Simpson and Mark Fain. So how did you see those 2 players tonight, Bruce? What did you notice from both?
You know, the single play that I most noticed about Dylan Simpson, and I did actually focus in later on how well he moved the puck, but there was a play in the first period where he tried to stand up a Carolina guy coming in on the forecheck, and the guy, and I think he was number 15 or 59, he was on that line, and he went right through Simpson, like he wasn't even there, and went into the corner and got the puck. And then about 10 or 15 seconds later, Simpson had the puck, and the same guy took a run at him, and the puck got turned over. Now that's a bad sequence that the coaches aren't going to like. But then he had some nice moments. Like, he is smart and an effective puck mover, as you keep telling us.
Yeah, there was one situation where he was quite mobile with the puck in the offensive blue line and got a penalty call, drew a penalty. I liked his puck moving quite a bit. And he's just continues to be, I think, calm under pressure with the puck. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the coaches think, because I thought, every single Oilers player had shaky moments in that game, including Kyler Yamamoto, who people, you know, are over the moon about. Like, there was a couple sequences in the first period where he got hammered on the boards and couldn't get it out. So even Yamamoto, who was, you know, had a pretty sharp game there, man, the Oilers just, they were all sleepwalking. McDavid, Dreisaitl, Talbot, and Larson, all these players. But what did you think of Fain?
Well, he was Fain. Just looking at the stats here, and that pairing was the only one that they actually had a positive shot differential. And I know, what does that mean in a 6-2 game? Not much. But the puck was going north more with them than any of the top 4, who kind of got clobbered for the most part. And I thought Mark Fain looks like Mark Fain. I don't know how better to describe him.
Yeah,
you know, he plays his game.
Fair comment. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the game. I just think he's too slow for the NHL. And I saw that, you know, gap issues where he's late to get into the corner. He's late here. He's late there. He's late on the pinch. So, man, the Carolina, that's what impressed me, Bruce, about that team was the ferocity, aggressiveness, and success of the defenseman pinching on the Oilers'
wingers.
Yeah,
the forecheck, it was great. They kept the puck in Edmonton territory. It seemed like minutes on end.
Such a great strategy if you have the right defenseman to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got to win that puck. That's a situation, I think, where a lot of coaches teach players to go for the puck, not take the man anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the defenseman's coming down there, they want them to win the puck.
Yeah.
And the Carolina players, wow, they were great. It was a nightmare.
Come right up to the hash, the forward.
Especially in the first.
Forward swings in behind him. Yeah, the first period, it was like, I said, my son arrived partway through the first period, and it was shots were like 10-1. And I said to him, they might only have to Zamboni the one end of the ice because the puck had been down there the whole time. And it's an old joke, but when it applies, it applies. And tonight it did in the first period. It was extremely one-sided. They were just quicker off the drop. And I guess you can dump all over the Oilers. I'm very sanguine about the loss, as you can probably tell. And in fact, I'm glad I didn't want them to go undefeated through the preseason. I'd rather they run into a good, hard team, face a little adversity. I'd rather lose this game now than in game three, like they did last year against Buffalo in the regular season, once some team came in here and cleaned their clock. You know,
the coach said the same thing.
They got whooped.
The coach said the same thing.
Did he? No, I didn't hear any of the post-game.
But that's what he said. He said, I'm glad it was tough. You know, don't want to lose ever.
Right.
It's good for the team to lose, though, because they can help them refocus. So same message.
Well, my son said in the third period, you know, the Oilers got a couple power plays, and he said, nice of them to get power plays in garbage time. You know, the typical grumbling of a home team down fan. And I said to him, don't sweat it. The entire exhibition season is nothing but garbage time, right? Like, these games do not matter. It doesn't matter who wins these games. You learn stuff from every game. And maybe you're not always happy with what you learn, but you know, there's stuff to be seen and figured out. I'd rather watch two NHL level teams going at it like we did tonight, and the one just whooped the other one.
You learn something every game, Bruce. Well, what did we learn about the right wing battle in this game? So there was four of the potential seven players were battling for a right wing spot. Seven are Kajula, Pakarinen, Strome, Puljujarvi, Yamamoto, Slepyshev, and Kassian. So four of them played.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, and there's all of this history of 18-year-olds probably who shouldn't have been with the Oilers. Maybe shouldn't have been. You know, definitely Sam Gagner
would
have been better off.
Exactly.
There's a few others, but Yakupov probably would have been better off playing in the KHL for a couple of years. Anyway, so there's all this baggage that we all have about this.
We all do.
He sure looked good. When he was put with Connor McDavid, he sure looked good. And he is such, again, you know, the goal that he scored, he finds that little open pocket and gets a stick on it, an incredible deflection. He's got such fabulous hands to quickly corral a pass, Bruce, quickly corral it and master the puck and just move it quickly to make the right play.
Well, I had a perfect view of that goal. We actually were down in like row 9, so and near center ice, and I happened to be on that wing where the shot came from. And you could see Yamamoto pull in front, sort of front the defenseman. And that puck was like, 18 to 24 inches off the ice. And he took it down and into the corner. And it was, I called it an Ichiro class bunt. Because he couldn't have done it any better. The way he took that up right out of the air and laid it down in the perfect spot. Like, he beats that out for a hit every single time, that bunt.
Yeah, he is some hockey player. It looks like the Oilers I mean, it's still early days, of course,
Yes,
but
of course.
he is leading the league in garbage time scoring. And it
Is he
looks like the
really?
Oilers may have hit home run, Bruce, with that draft pick. We'll see. We'll see. All right, let's talk about Puljujarvi, Bruce.
I
What did you think of
know.
his game?
Speaking of home runs, yeah. I thought he was a little bit better after they moved him. They moved around the three wingers there. They left Strome where he was, but they put Puljujarvi down with Draisaitl and Lucic. And, you know, I guess, I mean, they had a tough period, I guess. You know, they got two goals on him. But you know what struck me about that line, knowing that they weren't necessarily having a great night, but just being down and close like that, was how friggin' huge these guys are. All three of them are big, big men with, you know, good hands and sort of definitely top nine, top six, top three NHL players. And I'm trying to remember when the last time the Oilers had a line they could put together of quite that
size. Well, they started the year last
combined.
Year, Bruce. They started the year last year with Maroon, Puljujarvi, and Draisaitl, and that was a really effective
well,
line
yeah, well, there you go.
In the first couple weeks of the season. I agree with you, and Puljujarvi had some rough moments getting the puck out and turning it over a couple times, but he also had some absolutely fantastic moments passing the puck, just a few with that line. And I think they're onto something with that line and with the McDavid line right now, and I wouldn't be surprised, Bruce, if those are the lines we see on opening night. Yeah, I think those two lines have something. I think that's a really good line. I think Draisaitl, that line, Kajula, to me, has been the weakest of these players in the preseason, honestly. He is.
Yeah.
Last year he came out flying. This year he just seems like he's in a funk, like he's not getting. He looks like he should be sent down to the AHL of all those players. To me, he looks like the guy who's done the least to earn a job.
It's not impossible.
It is not. So I wouldn't mind. He could also switch to the left wing, of course. But yeah, I like those top two lines. I'd like to see them at least one more game go with those lines and see what happens. What did you think of Strome, Bruce?
Well, he did manage to poke that one puck home for the one all goal, and he did some nice work on that play just to get a stick on it and put it in the right place. Otherwise, he was just okay. Had a couple shots on net. I see he had two giveaways, was the only, you know, only thing up on the rest of his ledger, and that's that kind of matches what I saw, which was he didn't leave a deep, abiding impression.
I liked his. The goal I thought was kind of indicative of his play. It was kind of a.
It was a good goal.
Yeah, and he was. I thought there were some good, tough moments down low and in front of the net with Strome. Better than the previous game. And I liked him a lot with Jokinen and RNH. I liked that line. I thought RNH was the best Oiler, actually. Yeah. I know that. Well, I was listening to Bob Stauffer, and Bob was raving about Yamamoto the whole game.
Yeah.
And I thought Yamamoto was good, but I thought Nugent Hopkins was the best Oiler. He was the only one that had some real jump and was on the power play, was dangerous, and he led that line very well. So I like that line as well with Strome, Jokinen, and Nugent Hopkins. Those are two veteran wingers for Nuge. Smart two-way hockey players, I think, and could be strong complements for Nugent Hopkins. So wouldn't mind seeing that line again. So we didn't see Slepyshev. He's injured.
Right.
Pakarinen, we last saw score two goals, but he's gotten... Is he practicing with the B group or something? Do they still have a B group?
No, they do, but I inquired into that when I didn't see his name on the list of 15 forwards, and Reed Wilkins was kind enough to respond right away and say no, he neglected to mention Pakarinen and was subbing in on the fifth line, so they had four guys playing three positions.
Right,
so he was
gotcha.
Out there. But that doesn't sound like he's at the top of the food chain, does it?
No, and then there's Cassian.
It's a lock. And I think in the pregame, I basically wrote that Cassian's the one guy on this right-wing list is a lock that they really don't need to look at, so they're taking this chance to look at all these other guys.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down. Like, we'll know more. They don't have to make a decision for two games, and we'll have a lot more information by then. You know, there's no need for anyone. Like, it was interesting, Bruce. Both Mark Spector and Terry Jones, on the same day after Puljujärvi had a really big game, you know, scoring the two goals, both of them came out with articles saying that Puljujärvi should go to the AHL. Mm-hmm. And Jones also said that Yamamoto should go back to junior hockey. Mm-hmm. And they both kind of predicted it. And I'm always suspicious when I see that. I think, have they talked to somebody? Like, people don't like to be wrong in their predictions. Mm-hmm. And it just made me wonder if they'd had an off-the-record conversation with somebody. But kind of early. I guess my point is it's early to make that prediction. Why do you have to say, you don't have to say that. I mean, you can say whatever you want. But to me, they'll know a lot more in two more games.
There's a bit of a narrative going on there about Puljujärvi already. And I mean, let's see what he actually does. I mean, when he scores two goals and one assist in a period, and I hear, well, the assist was okay, but the two goals were just kind of lucky. And Jesus, he went to the front of the net and he found the puck and he put it in the net. That's kind of a nice thing to do.
Yeah, isn't that what they say? Like Greece, if Matt Hendricks had scored those goals, people would be in ecstasy talking about how he, you know, go to the net and good things happen and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't know. I find it a little bit troubling, and I just wonder where it's coming from, the narrative. And it's always a little bit worrisome when this happens, because I wonder, at least, is there someone on the coaching staff or the coach, or like, what's happening? Where are they hearing this? Mm-hmm. Or is it just from them?
Well, I think sometimes there's a little bit of internal stuff like that. Those guys talk to each other, of course, along the way. Maybe, I don't know, maybe less so now that there's so much on the internet. But anyway, could be, who knows.
And they're just there's such, you know, they're such insiders, right? So I just, anyway, so yeah. So I think we'll see Cassian on the fourth line opening night. And absolutely. I think we're going to see Yamamoto with McDavid on opening night, Bruce. And we'll see where, if it's Puljujärvi or Kajula. We'll see Strom with Nuge, I think. And although Strom could also work well with Dreisaitl. Sleppy is going to take, I think he'll be on injured reserve to start the year. And then, and it'll be interesting if they rehab him in Edmonton or in Bakersfield. But I don't, he's not going to be in the opening lineup, I don't think.
Well, yeah, I suppose there's no reason to rush him when you got like five or six guys trying out, and especially if you got the one guy that you keep him up, but once you make the decision, he's gone, whereas another guy you can send down and bring him back. And so if there's any inkling of keeping Yamamoto around, then Slepyshev to slow play him is a strategic move, probably.
He could go to the AHL. Do they get like a 2-week conditioning stint?
They can. And I believe he's still, for conditioning, there's no waivers, no worries.
He's on his ELC, is he not? His final year out of his ELC.
Yeah, I think he's still got one more year.
So he can go down, and that would probably coincide or come closer to the 9-game thing for Yamamoto, and then they can make the call then, you know, if Yamamoto.
If they're thinking about it, that's one way to do it. And the injury, you know, is legit, and you want it gives them a bit of cover in a way, though. But if it's an ankle sprain, there's no reason to rush the guy back. It's not like he's their number one right winger with a bullet ahead of everybody else. He's in the pile at the moment, and he'll get his chance.
He'll be wanting to rush back. He'll be watching these guys and thinking, "I want to get back in there." But yeah, you're from the team's perspective.
Yeah,
I agree, Bruce.
So, and you know, from the team's perspective, tonight they scored two goals and the right wingers scored both of the two goals. So, if you want to look for headaches, tonight you can look at basically all the positions.
Okay, what's your prediction, Bruce? Opening night, the four wingers on the right side, I've given away.
Oh, man, okay. Well, from certainty to least certain, Cassian will not be on the first line, but he's 100% in the lineup unless he's physically unable.
Okay.
I'd say Strom's 100% to be in the lineup, but only 90 or 95% to be at right wing.
Okay.
What do we got now? Slepyshev, I think they will he's unlikely to play right away. Might be on the roster. And look, now there's a lot of guys here.
Kajula,
yeah, he's got two. Yeah, Kajula could be playing right wing or left wing, or he could be 23rd, 13th forward. I think his time on right wing is tied to a degree to Slepyshev, unless he just starts scoring a bunch of goals over there and he starts succeeding. But I'm not seeing that.
So who are the other two, Bruce? You got to name them.
Well, for game one?
Yeah.
I'm thinking Yamamoto has got a getting close to 50-50 shot of being in there now.
Okay, and who's your final pick?
Okay, give me that list again. I'm looking at the wrong list here.
Puljujarvi, Kajula, or Pakarinen are your choices.
Oh, yeah, okay. Puljujarvi, I think, yes, he'll be in there.
Okay. So we're picking the same four players.
Oh, okay. Okay, and that's just guesswork, right? But
yeah,
we'll see. I mean, Yamamoto, he is an interesting case, and he's got quite a bit of game, and he doesn't seem shy out there. I feel sorry for him, though. The poor bugger, like, he's 5'7 and a half, right? 5'7. So what number do they give him? 5'6. That's kind of hurt.
It was a secret slam by the trading staff.
I saw that tonight, and it just hit me my funny bone when I saw that.
That's good.
I used to call Mario Mr. 6'6", even though he wasn't quite, but he played like he was, like, just so... He matched his number with his...
And McDavid plays like he's 9'7".
Not tonight, he sure didn't, but...
That was probably his worst game as an Oiler.
Well, him and Draisaitl. Although I will tell you that I saw all three of those guys as centers. They're such natural centers, each of them. McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent-Hopkins. They just, without the puck, with the puck coming up the ice in the neutral zone, like the whole package of the two-way flow of the game, they think and play that central position, and that's, just comes naturally to them. So it's sure nice to have that kind of depth. At the same time, the team that I've compared the Oilers to a little bit because of the strength down the middle is the Pittsburgh Penguins. Of the Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Jordan Staal era that won the first Stanley Cup for Pittsburgh there in 09. And I sort of think the matchup there would be Nuge versus Jordan Staal. The other two are obvious. And Jordan Staal, did I ever get an eyeful of that guy tonight? Can he ever play?
Yeah, he's a good player. Bruce, let's...
He outskated Oscar Klefbom. I couldn't believe it. I thought, Oscar's got this. Oh, he doesn't have this. Staal just beat him.
They are sleepwalking. All right, Bruce, let's wrap it up. And thanks for talking tonight. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Well, I'll start a new winning streak next time. This one just got away.
And in the meantime, and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast. I'm